Hi, true crime fans. I'm your host, Serena Rose. Today's episode means a lot to me because this crime took place in my hometown of Fresno, California. This episode, we'll be discussing the murder of Debbie Dorian and her killer that roamed free for 23 years, committing numerous violent crimes in California's Central Valley. Debbie Dorian was 22 years old. She was an economics student at Fresno State University. Her father, Peter Dorian, was a Fresno native, and her mother, Sarah Levin, lived in Los Osos. She was described as beautiful, energetic, and independent. She lived in an apartment not too far from her place of employment, the Piccadilly Inn near the Fresno airport. Days leading up to Debbie's murder, her father planned a trip to San Francisco. When she didn't arrive for the scheduled departure, her father was concerned. It wasn't like Debbie to be late or forgetful. She was always very responsible. He called the restaurant where Debbie worked. They informed him that Debbie was scheduled to work the day prior, but she was a no-show. And you have to remember, it was 1996 at this time. It's not like today where you can just get a hold of somebody and call them on their cell phone. So when Debbie's father didn't hear from her the night before they were planning on leaving, he really wasn't too concerned. He just assumed that she was busy with like work or class. But they had discussed their trip a few days prior, so she knew that they were to meet at his house. Debbie also had a boyfriend, and her boyfriend was a firefighter. And this was right around wildfire season. You know, in California, we get several wildfires, huge, even off-season wildfires. So it's a really busy time for them, and a lot of times they're not local. They're going out to these destinations where the wildfires are. So he wasn't there, and she was by herself. There was really nobody accounting for her, you know, daily movements, whether or not like she was going to work or she was going to school. She made it home okay. It's just a little concerning for Peter. So Peter raced to Debbie's apartment. After gaining access inside, Peter's world would change forever. Debbie was found by her father. She was bound, gagged, sexually assaulted, and murdered. The coroner determined that the assault happened 48 hours before Debbie was found. The killer wrapped Debbie's face in duct tape, and Debbie's cause of death appeared to be asphyxiation due to the duct tape blocking her airway. Authorities said that there was no forced entry, so Debbie likely knew her killer. The only clue that was left was DNA from the killer's semen. Authorities ran the DNA in their database and they didn't receive a match, so it's likely that Debbie's killer had never been arrested or had previous run-ins with the law. Sadly, this case remained unsolved with no credible leads. On the anniversary of Debbie's death, Governor Pete Wilson authorized a $50,000 reward to anyone that could provide information leading to an arrest. The reward remained in effect for 20 years. On August 19, 2016, the Fresno Police Department issued a statement. Fresno Police Chief Dyer announced that former Fresno PD homicide detectives were coming out of retirement to investigate new leads in an attempt to solve this 20-year-old murder case. He announced that the suspect in the case is also believed to be involved in sexual assaults that occurred in Visalia from 1999 to 2002. The killer was described as a Caucasian male, 30 to 40 years old. He could possibly have blonde or gray hair, approximately 5'6 to 6 feet tall, with a thin to medium build and armed with a handgun. For years, the suspect terrorized women in the Visalia area by sexually assaulting women and threatening to kill them if they screamed during their attack. Police also stated that the suspect was linked to 8 assaults in total. As far as authorities know, Debbie's case was the only attack that resulted in murder. Debbie's mother, Sarah Levin, issued a statement.
Let me tell you a little about my Deb. She was beautiful, she was funny, She was energetic and she was independent. She loved animals and worked hard at her classes in economics at Fresno State. She played flute in the band at Bullitt High School and graduated in June of 1992. She was looking forward to working on her master's degree at San Francisco State. Her life was brutally cut short by evil people who caused her much pain.
It makes me so sad because it seems like she had everything going for her. She was literally just about to graduate. She was beautiful. And to just have her life cut short by a senseless act, like from an evil, evil monster, it's just so disgusting. Unfortunately, this new development did not result in an arrest, and Debbie's killer still remained a mystery. Finally, in 2018, there was a break in the case, thanks to advancements in DNA matching technology. With genetic genealogy, the same method used to catch the Golden State Killer, police were able to put a face to the man that brutally raped and murdered Debbie Dorian and terrorized the women of Visalia, California. The Tulare County District Attorney Tim Ward said it best.
To those of you watching at home, if you or someone you know have been a victim of a violent crime, know this. You are not forgotten. Please do not give up hope if your case has not been solved. As science and as technology evolve, the space for criminals to operate in our communities gets smaller and smaller. My prayer is that these doors of justice someday open for you as well.
The killer's name was Nick Stain. At the time of Debbie's murder, he was 29 years old with a wife and two children. Nick Stain is now 52 years old. He was arrested in Visalia, California on October 1st, 2019, now divorced with two grown children, and is a manager at a restaurant and a part-time Uber and Lyft driver. What is so crazy about this is Nick Stain looks like the average man, like anyone walking down the street. Literally, the last Uber driver you had or a manager at your local Applebee's. But Nick Stain wasn't an average man. He seemed to have two very different lives. In fact, he had two separate Facebook pages that displayed how different. On one Facebook page, his name was Nick Stain. He seemed to be the quintessential American dad, posting pictures of his family, children, trips, and barbecues. In one post on his page, he posted a picture of candy apples with the caption, "Homemade candy apples for my employees." And I know that you always hear about killers being completely normal and super unsuspecting, but it's just a whole nother level of creepy when you know that this man was literally living with the fact that he killed a woman and sexually assaulted several other women. Like, that deep-rooted evil in him, and he was able to live life like a regular person, it's just so disgusting and disturbing. On his other profile, his name was Nick Steele. He listed his profession as a chairman of the board of directors for Fortune 500. Me and my brother were laughing at that because we're like, that's not even a company. Like, there's Fortune 500 companies, but it's Fortune 500 is not a company. His friends list consisted of only women, no surprise. His likes consisted of local massage therapists and bars. He posted regularly about wanting some company over. As the word of Nick Stain's crimes got around, his fake facade of a normal middle-aged family man crumbled around him. Ex-employees claimed that there was always something really creepy about him, and numerous women came forward with claims that Nick Stain posted an ad on a Facebook Marketplace page for a single female roommate. One woman was actually moving her stuff in when she noticed a camera in the restroom. The Facebook page administrator was notified and Nick Stain's ad was taken down. When Visalia police searched Nick Stain's home, they found a small recording device hidden in the guest bathroom. This was a bathroom used by three of Stain's female roommates. The discovery of the camera led to a misdemeanor charge of invasion of privacy in addition to the charges for sexual assault. Nick Stain is now waiting to go on trial for the murder of Debbie Dorian. Honestly, I just find it really hard to believe that he murdered Debbie in 1996, didn't assault a woman until 1999, and then stopped in 2002. So I'll be really interested to see If any other women come forward or if they link any more crimes to him, I mean, I'm almost positive that there's more crimes. And that's partly why I wanted to do this episode on this case, because I just feel like there's more victims out there. So if you know anyone who was sexually assaulted in the Visalia area, Fresno area, Central Valley, I'm pretty sure that there's more victims out there. Tag your friends, share this, or just open conversation about it. A lot of women have shame and they don't want to bring it up, or they just want to act like it never happened. But this son of a bitch should go to jail for as long as possible. With the murder of Debbie Dorian, he will. But he should definitely be held accountable for every single thing that he did to these women. I just can't even wrap my brain around the fact that he was just living life. In all his little posts, he was smiling and acting like he was just the coolest guy in the world. It's just so disgusting. Me and my family were looking at his Facebook page, and my mom noticed that he's just alone in every picture. There's nobody taking a picture with him. When there is someone else in a picture, he's literally just inserting himself in the picture. He just seemed like a really pathetic little man. And I think that he got so comfortable with his crimes and what he was doing that he just didn't think he would ever get caught. And I'm so glad, thanks to genetic genealogy and all the advancements in DNA studies and technology, that we're actually putting faces to these evil people. It's just really amazing, and I just wanted to put that out there. So I will keep you posted on this case. I will post all the pictures and the links. If you like this podcast, go ahead and subscribe to our podcast channel, or follow us on Twitter at @criminalitypod and on Instagram at @criminalitypodcast. And until next time, stay safe.